Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, represented by Simon Briggs across the table from me, and Eurosports, represented by Catherine Whittaker, who is sitting in front of a little glass of wine, and I'm having a sandwich. And the reason we're doing all of this is because the tennis is over for the day on semi-finals day, or at least three of the semi-finals have come and gone, and they have resulted in Simona Halep winning an epic, an extraordinary match in which match points were saved on either side against Angelique Kerber, and Caroline Wozniacki's through to her first ever final at the Australian Open, and we've just had Kyle Edmund against Marin Cilic, and it ended with a straight sets win for Marin Cilic. And so we're going to talk about all this with Catherine and Simon. But what did you make of the performance of Kyle Edmund today? He had a tie break in the second set, but got injured pretty early on in it, I thought.
Yeah, well, I think we are waiting. In fact, we've just had an announcement to say he's going to be a little bit delayed coming into press. I think until we've heard from him and heard him explain how hampered he was physically, it's difficult to know. I mean, there's no doubt he didn't play well tonight. He didn't lay an egg, is the expression that John McEnroe used in our preview piece with him live on Eurosport. John McEnroe
said, did you expect him to lay an egg?
He said he's just going to make sure he doesn't go out and lay an egg out there, which I
right.
think means, you know, disgrace yourself.
Not show up.
Not basically. Show up. I don't think that happened. I just don't think he played particularly well. He wasn't able to put the venom on his forehand, which is necessary for him to have a chance in matches like this. And he wasn't able to move quite as well as usual, particularly after... was it the end of the first set when he seemed to drop off considerably physically? But Marin Cilic was brilliant. He really,
he was
brilliant.
Good.
And I'm a bit annoyed that we're left in another situation where we don't know how much physical impediment is a factor in the match. And I suspect Kyle will give a bit away, but he might not be entirely frank for sportsmanship-based reasons about how hampered he was tonight, because it's generally speaking not the done thing. And I just, you know, I don't want to be speculating about injury in these matches because Marin Cilic was brilliant, and those are the facts. That's what we should remember.
Well,
really,
he was brilliant, but there was something up with Kyle.
There was, just like, you know, there was when Marin Cilic beat Rafael Nadal, but poor Marin Cilic, that there's another you know, there's another clause after
nobody
after
says
his
that about
winning
when Marin
results.
Cilic beat or lost to Roger Federer in the Wimbledon final, but do they just say,
no.
Oh, isn't Roger Federer magnificent? What do you think
Quite
about
right.
it all, Simon?
Well, I've been down in the tunnel talking to Fiddy Rosengren, the coach, and Laurent Frankopan, the agent, and James Trotman from the sort of LTA side of the operation, and I think they were all agreed that there's something going on, but none of them really know either. Or if they do, they're not prepared to talk about it openly. Fiddy was still saying that he hopes that Kyle will be able to play Davis Cup, which is going to be the next theoretical appointment on his calendar. Although I've got to say, I do have doubts about that. I think we could see the two lefties in combination, Liam Brody and Cameron Norrie, up against the might of Spain on clay. But that's a conversation for another day. In the meantime, I didn't think he he looked good from the end of the first set, really. He wasn't moving with much explosivity. One thing I noticed is that he barely hit a forehand in the first set, and that wasn't because he was injured then, I don't think. That was because Cilic was hitting so hard and flat into Carl's backhand. He didn't have time to run around and get the forehands away. So Cilic was so good in the first set that Kyle, he never got a chance to hit an attacking forehand, and that was why he lost at 6-2. And then physically, I think he kind of went to bits, really. And he just, we're playing against Cilic in that kind of form. You can't do it on sort of three-quarter speed movement, do you? You've got to be absolutely explosive to get your record on those serves and to run around the occasional ball when it's homing in on your backhand wing all the time.
The one time when he started to inflict a bit of damage was when he lost his temper. And I mean, I've never seen him lose his temper before, and it was to do with an overall that was replayed and or not replayed, which he thought should have been, and he really got angry with John Blum, the umpire, demanded the referee come out, and that was quite a break in play, and then suddenly he smoked the one forehand of the match that had us almost ducking in our commentary box because you could see the venom in him, the anger in him.
Yeah, and it had the element of surprise for Cilic, because, and it made you realise in that moment how much venom he hadn't been putting on the forehand up until that point. I know that was a particularly exceptional one, but it was so much bigger than anything else he'd produced. It really made you go, OK, Carl, that's what you need to, that's what you need to do now. And then it didn't fade away, but he just, I don't know. You're right, Cilic did a great job of keeping it on the backhand, and I think without question the not being able to run around his backhand onto the forehand wing was a big factor. But why is Hawkeye not employed in those instances? I'm not suggesting that had an impact on the overall outcome of the match. I don't, but it does seem silly in an age of technology and in an era of tennis when we've accepted the use of technology, that it's not being used in those sorts of instances. I mean, maybe there'd have to be a slightly more advanced layer of the technology, a SNCO type thing, like they use in cricket, because it's all about when the vocal call of out came and whether it affects the person's shot making, the fact that they missed the ball. But surely, yeah, technology exists.
I agree.
To use.
They certainly could do something about that. But that having been said, and we had Andy Roddick on the show a few years ago saying Hawkeye's great, but we should get rid of it. And because you would have lost that moment where Kyle Edmund revealed a side to his personality that I barely knew existed. He did, though, in his very polite McEnroe moment. He did use the word rubbish, which I've never heard used on a tennis court before, and I thought that was magnificent.
But you mentioned that forehand, and actually, Cilic talked about it quite a lot, didn't he, in the post-match on-court interview with Courier. He kept on saying he unfurled a forehand, or I can't remember what the verb he used, or he opened up his forehand or something, and it obviously preyed on his mind. It's fascinating the psychological effect that shot has had on people throughout this tournament. It's just kind of made their eyes widen and their stomachs kind of tighten up when he just unloads on one. It's almost, it only wins one point, but it's like a real right hook to the jawbone, isn't it? When he does get one of those in and Cilic talked about the fact that he didn't have too many more after that, I think. Didn't he mention that in the on-court interview? So it's amazing that you think that these shots actually, what we don't realise is how much more value that they have than the individual points they win.
Yeah. There was one moment that I think was a real punch to the guts for Edmund tonight was during the tiebreak when he was 4-3 behind and there was an overall which went against him and it ended up levelling the tiebreak up. And he lost out on that, and you could see him just chastising his bad luck because of that moment.
Yeah, I mean, the ball landed on the baseline, didn't it? So he wasn't on top in the rally, but the point was he'd actually got the serve back. It was a Cilic serve point, and that meant that Cilic had another serve. I don't think he got the next return back, because I remember. So, yeah, that was a bit of a swing against him. And, yeah, one of those nights, really. I guess he was probably due a night when things went against him. He had a few nights when they went for him, but made his own luck, really, during the fortnight. And despite it being a disappointing outcome, we've got to just remember how much good he's done for British tennis, and not from a very selfish perspective, how much great copy he's given us over the last 12 days.
Yeah, commensurate with probably both Kyle Edmunds' mood and Marin Cilic's level of play tonight, there does appear to be a lightning storm happening over the city of Melbourne. Yeah, the screen over there is showing a wide shot of the Rod Laver Arena and the city of Melbourne with lightning cracking overhead. So take cover. Well, I mean, we are undercover, but let's definitely stay here.
Yes.
Yeah, there it goes.
Yeah,
big purple sky.
It's going to be an eventful walkout, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So what do you think the paper will look like tomorrow? I mean, as we speak to you now, it's kind of lunchtime UK time, so you've got the rest of the day UK time, I suppose, to prepare what you're going to write and et cetera. What is your overall takeaway from it, Simon?
Yeah, I think it'll come back a bit. If he'd won, obviously, it would have been another four pages and another 5 a.m. finish for me. As it is, it'll come back to a page probably, and we'll have a report and a quotes piece and five things that he can work on. And, you know, Rosengren definitely says that there's plenty of room for improvement still. I think coaches always say that, don't they? But
I believe he in particular really doesn't believe in any kind of perfection, not even relative perfection to the individual. I know that sounds kind of trite and probably like most people would say, but apparently he really, really is a big believer in hammering that home. And he's again, this is going to sound sort of like a coach cliche, but he's not about results, he's about performances. There are a couple of performances of Carl's this week that he really wasn't happy with, and there are a couple that he was absolutely over the moon with, and it's very much about the performance and the way he carries himself on the court and the overall picture rather than what the score looks like at the end of the match.
Yeah. Pat Cash still reckons that he's going to be a top 10 player. That's what he said to us in the Five Live commentary box eventually. And he did draw attention to something I think we've commented on before, that perhaps grass is going to be his biggest challenge in
a way. Totally. I mean, although he did have a Wimbledon junior semi-final, we were reminded today, because Aidan McHugh made the semi-final here, the Scottish 17-year-old, and it's the first time we've had a boy in the semi-finals of the junior event of the Slam since Kyle in 2013 at Wimbledon. So
that's
his best result at Wimbledon. Aidan McHugh looked excellent. Yeah, he was playing the wonderfully named Rinky Hijiwata, something like that. Hijikata,
yeah.
Right? Sorry, I'm struggling with that name. But it was a good match. McHugh is 5'9". He played a 6'9" server earlier in the week, which was an extraordinary contrast. Hijikata actually much more his size. Quite a stylish match. Hijikata played a wonderful saber at one point, and totally hit a winner on the half volley off a McHugh serve. And apart from that, McHugh volley well, lovely forehand, a stylish player. Lots going on, lots of personality. So yeah, he seems like an excellent one for the future.
And a member of the Andy Murray stable, of course, the Andy Murray sort of management mentoring stable. No, he seems great to me. Through to the semi final, that's
good for him.
It's pretty. Pretty big deal, isn't it? And
talking of things that are pretty big deal, it's a pretty big deal that you haven't actually ultimately had to sue the tennis gods, which you were threatening to do at one stage.
I was going to say, I feel like we should probably just put out a disclaimer and remind people that we are British, and that's the only editorial reason that we have led on the Cilic-Edmund match, because all other things be equal, we should be leading on Halep-Kerr, because that's the story of the day, the match of the day, the result of the day, the quotes of the day coming subsequent to that match. 9-7 in the third, a win for Simona Halep. I mean, it kind of had everything, didn't it? I went through every emotion because I thought it was going to be an absolute damp squib.
Well, it was 5-love after 13 minutes to Simona Halep. 8 minutes later, it was 5-3. And then it was 6-3, and then she went to break up in the second set. And I mean, she was playing very well. For some reason, Angelique Kerber couldn't really find a game. They certainly couldn't play well at the same time for the first two and a bit sets. But then Kerber leveled, and then all hell broke loose. I mean, that third set was one of the most dramatic sets I've ever seen. Both players having match points. rallies that looked like they'd ended about four times each, and they were still digging balls out the corners and moonballing back and then driving. I mean, you know, you've got like the Halep driven back and down the line, replied with the Kerber sort of squat game. Then she's wellying her own forehand down the line. I mean, it had everything. It really did. And then I think it was 40-15 Kerber match points, and it really looked over. And somehow Halep managed to win it from there.
Yeah, I could watch that tennis match as every tennis match for the rest of my life, I think. Maybe minus the first 20 minutes, as good as Halep was. You know, it wasn't. It was the contest of it which made it brilliant today. I loved the quote from Halep on the court after. She said, "I'm really proud of myself today." She said, "I'm going to let myself be proud of myself." And I love that. And then a quote from Kerber in her press conference afterwards saying, "I'm back. I know that I'm back." You know, regardless of the result today, and the million things that one line tells you about her experience of last year and how different she feels now. You know, it's only 12 months ago that she seemed like a completely different human being, and
pleasing.
Yeah, I loved everything about that final set. The final sort of 2 hours of it, really, but everything about it was an absolute treat.
It made it for a bit of a strange day in a way, didn't it? Because we were obviously waiting for the Kyle Edmund match from a British perspective, in as much as that's what our work had to focus on. And yet, at the same time, you had got one of the great contests going on, and also so much at stake. You know, as Catherine mentioned, you've got Kerber finally refining her form, rediscovering a love for the game, I think. And you've got Halep, who's never won a slam. You've got Wozniacki, who's never won a slam. Now the world number one ranking is basically going to be decided in the final. Quite something.
And you're going to have number one against number two for the first time in a long time, I think, women's tennis. And you've got the potential for somebody to win a Grand Slam title having come from match point down in two separate previous matches, which we think, Simon, hasn't been done before. Twitter tells us hasn't been done before.
Yeah, there's a non-official chart of players who've come back from match point to win slams, and nobody on there has done it twice in the same tournament. I'm just cheesed off because I thought for a minute that I actually predicted something right and that Kerber was going to be in the final. And when she saved two match points and then had two match points, I was getting ready to start applauding. Because I've never got a prediction right in my life.
And David had Julia Gerges in the final. I feel like this is a good moment to point
Simona
that out.
Simona Halep winning the title.
Oh, sorry.
you had to
rub
well.
It in.
Brilliant.
But I do think
I was trying to help there, Simon. I'm sorry.
I do think that, once again, the women's tournament overall has been better than the men's. If you take out the British bias.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I actually think I expected so many matches to be great on the women's side that didn't end up being.
Su Wei Sai against Kerber.
Yeah.
Hang on, there have been an equal number of surprises though. Fett against Wozniacki, Davis against Halep.
Yeah,
as many disappointments. I know Keys Kerber was a disappointment. Pliskova Halep was a disappointment. There are always damp squibs. Mm. There have been some fantastic surprises as well.
Do you know, I actually think part of the problem is the scheduling, in that the matches that I really remember are the ones that were given this primetime billing of Dimitrov Kyrgios and Chung against Djokovic and all this sort of thing. And so, you know, yes, I'll take
you're
your
right.
Point.
I mean, Wozniacki, Carlos Suarez, Navarro was an absolute classic. And the deciding set of that, Suarez, Navarro saving match point in the second set, and the deciding set was played at 1 o'clock in the morning, and that's pretty unacceptable for a women's quarterfinal, really. I know a certain amount of that is out of organisers' hands, but there are ways of making sure that two elite level athletes aren't playing an absolutely corking match with nobody watching at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, listen, I've got
I think we're going back into an era of like we had in the early 2000s of great women's champions who, and they haven't got to that status yet, but I think they're going to.
I hope so. Listen, I've got to go and interview Marin Cilic. You guys have got to go and interview Kyle Edmund. Let's reconvene in a minute.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So I've just been speaking to Marin Cilic, you've just been speaking to Kyle Edmund, and I imagine in rather different frames of mind. Kyle, Marin Cilic was delighted.
Yeah, I should think so too. Yes, I mean, Kyle Edmund wasn't delighted, but do you know what? He was as charming just now in his press conference and in his interview with me and with Russell for BBC Radio as well, as he's been all week. Not that he's not charming, he's always likeable, but he sort of loosened up and he was doing some jokes and he had the...
What was his best joke?
He had the press conference room in the palm of his hand, a bit like Dan Evans did last year. You know,
really?
Not to quite the same unguarded extent, of course, but
like
it was...
What?
I don't know, he was asked, it was Simon in fact, Simon had caught up with Freddie, or people are now calling him Fiddy, which I think is the Swedish abbreviation,
Fida.
So I'm now just confused about, it feels a bit pretentious to call him Feeder or Fred. I'm going to go Freddie, I'm committing to Freddie. He said, oh, I spoke to Freddie just after the match, and he said you wouldn't be spending your prize money from this fortnight on a Ferrari. Is that true? And he sort of... I mean, it's not going to be funny delivering it second-hand, Catherine Whittaker style, but he said, no, mostly because I've got a Jaguar deal, though.
It's good being a tennis player, isn't it?
And then somebody else asked him at the end. They obviously had a particular angle. It was an American journalist, a particular angle that they were working on for their story. And he said... it was a really tenuous link question. He said, a lot of tennis players have come through... Beverly Hills. You've come through Beverly, Yorkshire. What's Beverly, Yorkshire like? And he just goes, I don't think it's much like Beverly Hills.
Oh, that's
and then he sort of
good.
Gave us his life story about going to Beverly Grammar School, and well, it was. Do you know what? It was really good, and you could see, and again a cliche, you could see what a wonderful experience he'd had these 2 weeks. And, you know, I asked him about, you know, if there was anything in particular he'd take home as having enjoyed. And he said he'd really enjoyed the there being nobody in the Players' Cafe, feeling special, because there was no one else in the Players' Cafe.
Well, you know, we've talked about that, haven't we?
We have. I mean, there is this sudden drop-off from week one to week two.
And he wouldn't have known about that.
Well, exactly. You know, he got to the fourth round, and there's still a bit of a buzz around at fourth round stage, because there's not many doubles matches been played. There's a lot of doubles players around still, you know, 16 on each side, men's and women's. But suddenly, after the fourth round, there's this huge drop-off. And obviously, by this stage, it's really quiet around the players' area. And I liked that little bit of insight, and it was he was just a bit less guarded than usual. And
Wade's
soft
now, isn't it? And he can just reflect. So good for him. He's a good guy. So we spoke about Simone Halep and Angelique Kerber. I almost feel like I want to talk about it again because it was just good. It was really uplifting. What I loved about it, and before we get on to talk about Caroline Wozniacki, what I loved about it, walking around and just, I didn't see the whole match, whole final set, but I was watching as much as I could, is just how they were both going for it right at the end. It was as though when Halep went a break down and Kerber was serving for the match and she had the match points, Halep just, it was like she just went, oh, screw this. I'm going for
it. It was. She was gnarly as hell, and they both were. But it was Halep that was just being a bit braver and a bit gutsier. I mean, Kerber was fighting for her life. She was scrapping around at the baseline, but she wasn't taking the risks. And Halep, I don't think, is a natural risk taker. So I really respected the way she was trying to make things happen out there, even at match points down, even in the tightest situations. And there were some wayward, tight errors in there, and she still pushed through and kept going for it and kept trying to be gutsy. And I think that's what she... In fact, she did say that on the court. She said that's what she was proud of. That's why she was going to allow herself to be proud of herself today, because it's not like she wasn't tense and tight and feeling it and running through all of the other matches she's lost when she should have won.
She needed that match win more than any other that she's had. And I mean, obviously, you could say that because she's in the final, but it's more that the number of matches she's lost from winning positions, though, even over the last year, against Contra at Wimbledon, against Ostapenko, the French Open final, she just desperately needed to get a win in that sort of situation.
Absolutely, yeah. And it really did get to the point where I've said this already about one other match this week, and I can't remember what it was. Whenever it was, it feels like 1,000 years ago. Mm. But it got to the point where I couldn't quite contemplate the thought of one of them losing it. I just couldn't.
Oh, no. I know what you mean there, because they're such admirable players,
yeah,
aren't they?
And partly why I referenced what Kerber had to say afterwards, because I was so pleased that she was sort of reflective enough about the overall situation in that sort of what must have been a moment of real grief, to be positive and to what sounds like be genuinely positive. So, yeah, marginally, Halep needed it more than Kerber, yes. And I think that's probably what told.
Caroline Wozniacki will be her opponent. We have this wonderful situation now where everything is on the line in this final. Two players that both, it feels wrong that they're not Grand Slam champions. Well, one of them will be. And the world number one ranking could shift as a result. But that still feels like a footnote to me in the scheme of things, because a slam will be the making of these two. I hope that they both win slams before they retire.
Whoever doesn't win is going to be, for me, the best player ever on the WTA tour not to have won a Grand Slam title. I know there are other contenders: Elena Dementieva,
Yelena Yankovic, Dinara Safina.
That will for sure be the case, whichever of them loses it, and that's going to be gut-wrenching. So I agree, whoever it is should still go on and win another Grand Slam title at some point. You've got the potential record of, if Wozniacki does retake the number one, she'll have the longest gap between periods at number one. That would be quite something, and she's still not that old.
It's about 7 years, isn't it?
8 years, I believe. Yeah.
And the head to head between the two is 4-2. I was quite surprised by this. 4-2 in the favour of Wozniacki. Quite surprised.
Yeah, but they haven't played that much recently. I can't remember. I haven't looked in detail at the head to head. I'd just seen the headline numbers like you. I'll do more research on it tomorrow. But I can't. Can you remember many thrilling recent or any recent Wozniacki Halep matches? I can't.
Well, I think they played it in Singapore. I think, because they were all drawn together.
Yes, they must have. Yes, they did. But why don't we remember that? Was it a rubbish match?
I think Simona Halep had a really bad time during that tournament. She didn't really turn up during that tournament. And that's what's so pleasing, is because she's an uplifting player to watch. And yet when she throws in an egg, like John McEnroe says...
It's actually laying an egg,
right,
David.
Okay, well, when she lays an egg...
If you're going to be American, do it properly.
I find it really disheartening. I don't like to see quality tennis players, really talented tennis players that have got so much to give and that are so uplifting for the crowd to watch, when they just don't do themselves justice, can't be doing with that. And today she was the complete antithesis of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And she really lapped up the crowd's appreciation for it as well. And she could win a Grand Slam tournament as the world number one without a clothing sponsor. I know I keep coming back to this, and I know nobody seems to find it as extraordinary as
me. I quite enjoyed Ben Rothenberg's gif of Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman going into the store that had rejected her before she was rich and just saying, big mistake.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. So you wanted to invest more in Garbini Muguruza, did you? I mean, I've...
Nothing wrong with that in general, but I think there's
funds to go around. I don't think Adidas funds are spread that thinly, is
They're
my
not
point.
Exactly not destitute.
Not that Muguruza isn't a worthy recipient of sponsorship funds, but it seems
it
to
is
me
bizarre.
That... Yeah, it just seems completely bizarre.
Wozniacki, in her... The story of her match with Elise Mertens, who played well, but Wozniacki was always in charge, is that she had what is so rare to see with Wozniacki. She had a real wobble when she was serving for the match. She lost a serve. She suddenly went two set points down. So she was on the brink of victory, and she
forgot how to play
up.
Tennis for a bit. She lost 8 points in a row.
Yeah.
She lost 8 points in a row.
She was serving for the match, and she was at 30 love. And I love that afterwards, when she did the interview on court afterwards, she completely owned up to it all. She just said, I was there at 30 all, and I'm like, my legs are shaking. They don't usually do that. I don't really know what to do about it. And it was just this wonderful open door into her soul of how much this meant to her. Similar
which
in the Tibetier finals.
You don't often get with Caroline Wozniacki.
No.
Because there is a wall-up. She can be charming, but you never quite feel like you're seeing her. I quite often feel like there's a slight... She can be charming with the glaze, but there is quite often the glaze. So to actually see into her and see a bit of vulnerability like that is important, I think, for us lot.
Yeah, so I'm delighted for her that she got over the line there. It was a similar situation when she was trying to serve it out at the WTA finals and there was 5 break points and all that sort of thing.
Can you imagine if they get to, 6-all in the third on Saturday?
I hope they do.
Who's going to blink
really
first?
Do.
It really could be an absolute thriller, couldn't it? And I think, again, it could come down to who's prepared to be more gutsy in the moment, because Wozniacki as well, she tries to force herself to take the risks, but it doesn't come naturally to her.
No.
So, I can't wait. It's going to be, 35 degrees Saturday and 39 on Sunday, and worse, in fact, than the last heat wave we had, because there's a lot more humidity for this one.
And there's the thunderstorm that Catherine's been talking about. And tomorrow, we've got the other men's semi-final. Chung against Federer.
Yeah, it's a weird schedule here. I mean, it kind of works, doesn't it? But you have 3 semi-finals on one day and you want to call it semi-finals day, but then you have this day tomorrow where you have the women's doubles final, which is Mladenovic-Babos against Makarova-Vesnina. And then you have a night session with the one remaining men's semi-final, which is Roger Federer against Haeyeon Chung, and I think Roger Federer's got a match on his hands there, I really do.
Are you predicting Roger Federer to lose?
No, because I had him to win the tournament before the tournament, and that argument panned out for me with Halep last night when I thought she could have a match on her hands. So I'm just going to stick to my guns, but give myself a get-out-of-jail-free card by saying I really think Haeyeon Chung is going to give him a right old go.
Yeah, I do too. I think we were in for a treat. I can't wait. Right, we better go and get some sleep in. You lot need to get some sleep in because you've got a bit of time before the next match between Federer and Chung. And so you can listen to this tennis podcast and then you can go and have a sleep. Catherine, lovely to have you with us. As always, Simon Briggs is off writing now. You can read all of his pieces. Catherine will be back on Eurosport tomorrow. What time does coverage start?
Well, we will be showing the women's doubles final if you want to watch that in the middle of the night. I think that's at 5 a.m. UK time, but we're back at 8 a.m. and with studio build-up to the Federer-Chung semi-final at 8:30, I think. Not confirmed, so don't quote me on it, but I think we're going to have Boris Becker. coverage tomorrow.
Big Boris. Excellent.
Big old Boris.
And we will be back on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra with the conclusion, hopefully, of that match.
Please we'll certainly also be don't quote me on calling him Big Old Boris.
Well, I've done it. And it's all right. Let's just tell him I did it. All right?
It was meant affectionately.
Boom, boom. There you go. Of course, we are brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Eurosport. We are executive produced by Melanie Bowes, our champion of the Tennis Podcast Predictions Challenge, and by Triple S and by TennisBalls.com. We are sponsored by La Manga Club, the wonderful holiday destination in Spain where you can play tennis, golf, you name it. And Catherine and myself, David Law, we will be back with another Tennis Podcast after play tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.